Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gungi-Ruzik, joined as always by Samuel Rowan for episode, 199 of the show. We're inching close to 200 and inching as in we're one away and of, big milestone. I'm super excited to get to episode 200, but don't want to look too far to the future. What Axel Schuster always used to say in year one, don't want to look too much in the rearview mirror, want to look through the windshield. Well, we'll look through the windshield at a big weekend for the Whitecaps. It was Derby weekend at BC Place. Fantastic atmosphere. Great support from the Timbers fans. It was loud. Whitecaps end up picking up a big win to continue their hot start to the season. Things we're not used to saying, but hey, it certainly shows what kind of year it's been for the Whitecaps. Meanwhile, of course, around MLS, another chaotic weekend, we expect no less. And quietly, the Canadian Premier League approaching. We're now a week away from kickoff, which I'm very excited for. We've got a BC doubleheader in week one. Of course, last year was a BC game. This time we've got a Pacific hosting a game. We've got Vancouver FC hosting a game, same weekend. It's going to be great to have that back. League One BC also quietly less than a month away. So obviously a huge few weeks ahead for us. And we're of course excited to cover it on the show. But before we get into today's smattering of news headline by the Whitecaps win, Sam, how's it doing? How's it going this weekend?
Doing very well. Coming off the back of a Vancouver Whitecaps home victory. That was a fun crowd, a fun environment on the weekend. After struggling a bit against Charlotte and then struggling in a major way against RSL. It was good to see the Whitecaps get on the board at home, albeit perhaps in more entertaining fashion than they would have hoped, given how they came out of the gates. But lots of good, bad, and everything in between to talk about from that Portland Timbers match. So we'll look back a little bit at that. And then, bam, you're right into another rivalry week against TFC. This one's going to be fun too. Another great home matchup. Vancouver looking to do the double here over some rivalry competition. And obviously this one has a little extra too, because it's John Herdman. It's, you got Canadian national team players who obviously know him. You've got Jay Herdman in the mix in the Whitecaps organization. So it's a bit of a family affair. I was looking forward to this matchup as well and looking forward to being there in person. So yeah, lots of good stuff to dive into, as well as Alex mentioned, looking around MLS a little bit. Whitecaps precariously close to the top of the table, which is nice to hear this early in the season. And then maybe at the end, we're going to, just tease a little bit some preview content next week as the Canadian Premier League season right around the corner. Some fire kits being dropped to get us hyped, and signings being made last minute as well. So I feel like I've been saying this for a while now, but soccer season in BC just keeps picking up every step along the way.
Yeah, I mean, man, yeah, so much to dive into this week. I mean, the TFC game is going to be fascinating, and I'll dive into why, of course, later. But let's start with the fun, pretty perfect result. And I say that because, no, let's be honest, the 3-2 result, you're never happy with that, especially you have a 2-0 lead. Good teams, great teams win that game 3-0, and you go without fuss. But you know what? I think it's fitting that you get your first win in front of a home crowd with whatever the heck that was, where you lose your 2-goal lead out of nothing. The Whitecaps were cruising and they make two mistakes, ends up in their net, but you get an 85th minute winner. You send the crowd home happy after two sleepy home games where you had great crowds, but you weren't able to take advantage of it. They ticked all the boxes. You got an early goal to get them into it, which really helped them in the first half. And we finally saw them take advantage of, again, these great crowds. Again, not to repeat myself, but what they were saying in the press box. It was the fifth game in a row where they've had 22,000 plus, which is a club record. You know, of those five games, what one was a two of them were results they dropped to LAFC. Like, they didn't win them, then they didn't win against Charlotte, they didn't win against RSL. It was nice for them to see a win over the line with the late winner, because there's no better way to get the crowd involved than that. So yeah, overall, maybe again we'll dissect the performance of why it was far from perfect, but at the end of the day, you get a win. Late winners at home always hit different, especially in a derby match, right? Like, the Caps had the Cascadia Cup and they're parading around in their supporters section. You had the Portland fans being loud, as they always are. Those sorts of games are always special. And yeah, I look for the Whitecaps. They won't care how. They won't care how many. And, you know, hey, triumphant return for Vanni Sartini to the bench. And, of course, he was in his top form for it in the press conference after. So, yeah, vibes were good. And that's good, because the first two home games, they certainly weren't.
Yeah, I guess where to start with this one? I think probably Fafapiko, right? That's a big storyline through five matches for the Vancouver Whitecaps, is, you know, the way too early team MVP candidate conversation. Fafa's been crucial to when Vancouver's been dynamic offensively so far this season. Pico's been a big part of it. We saw that against the Timbers. You know, his quality finish, which was tremendous to see in person, albeit some suspect defending from Zach McGraw on that one, but a tremendous finish nonetheless. And just the way his pace, again, we feel a little bit like a broken record, because we've been talking about this when Dimir Krylak was in the starting lineup, but the room he was able to create for Krylak in this one, and then for Ryan Gauld as well, made a big difference. And you know, big shout out to Ali Ahmed as well, who was immense in this one. So those two in the first half in particular, they were buzzing, and it got Ryan Gauld a little more involved. You know, a Krylak I felt like was still reasonably quiet, but it's clear to me, and we wrote this post-match, that Vancouver still has, they're playing a little bit differently this season, where it's not high event chaos anymore. And, you know, that's been reflected in their style of play, maybe not being as attractive all the time, but they still have that gear, that ability to open things up and to be really dynamic offensively in moments. And I think they'll continue to find more of those as the season goes on. And just seeing what we saw from Pico and Ahmed this past Saturday, I think it gives me reason to be encouraged that there's still some good underlying offensive play here in Vancouver. It's just a matter of combining that with improved work on the defensive side. Now, obviously, we can maybe talk about the defensive side of things in this matchup specifically as well. But to me, just seeing Ahmed and Pico thrive, that was takeaway number one from this past weekend against Portland.
Yeah, we definitely have thoughts on the defensive side, so we'll get to those. But yeah, to stick with the offensive side, I mean, look, you have to be encouraged. Three goals, you're never going to, you know, point your nose up at that, especially you see who scores them. Ryan Gauld scoring is huge, because, look, for him to get that first goal contribution at game five, you would have loved to have him get it on game two, game three, but they've been getting results without it. So the fact that the captain, the MVP, you know, is up and running, I think that's huge and will only help his confidence. You can see it. He almost added a brace not that long after, and it was his usual dangerous self. But yeah, it's great to see what Fafapiko has done. I mean, the stat line speaks for itself. Two starts, two goals, two assists. Like, that's quite the per 90 numbers on that are certainly off the charts. I think he's up to 213 minutes on the season with those sorts of numbers. Goal or assist every 50 minutes. All been great ones. And yeah, it shows really what the Whitecaps offense, where it seems to be their best right now. It seems to be when it's White and Krylak on the field, it's just too top heavy. It's too much going on. It's too much back to goal. There's not enough going on in the midfield and out wide, and teams clog those up. Whitecaps kind of have no answers but to punt it long to White and Krylak, which sometimes works, but also 80% of the time doesn't work. You end up stuck with a frustrating game where you're like, I didn't feel like they generated much. They didn't. They continue to not generate too much overall. But what we're seeing in these games now, where they stretch the game, they open it up, they get some wide players, they start Krylak up front. Look, Krylak's game wasn't anything to write home about. I mean, the numbers end up being 63 minutes, 13 out of 15 passes, no shots, no chances created. But he did his job because he filled a hole up front. He drew defenders in, and it opened up space for Pico, Ahmed, Tapsuli. They were electric down, you know, both wings, even swapping a few times, showing some great chemistry on the pitch. Heck, as it turned out after the game, they've got some pretty good chemistry off the pitch too, which is nice and to see developing between the youngster and Ahmed. You know, the newer face to MLS, and then the vet and Pico. They've got a nice kind of, you know, good cop, bad cop vibe kind of going on there, which is good. But really, yeah, I think this was the best offensive version of the Whitecaps that we're seeing. And I think this is kind of what this Whitecaps team will want to build off of, because in games where Krylak and White are together, it's just clunky. It's, you know, low quality. There's not a lot of movement. It's easy to defend. But when Pico and Ahmed stretch the game out, it's great, because look, they're the Whitecaps. They're not, you know, it's tough to gauge how they're doing offensively, because yes, they're scoring goals, but they're generating them at a far lesser rate last year in terms of chance creation. They're bottom three in shots for, but in a game like this, they have 13 shots, 5 on target. All of them felt like quality, right? Like, it felt like this could have been easily a 4-5 goal game. Max Crepo made some big saves. They squandered some other chances. When they open up the game, they really start to look like themselves offensively. And it shows, because what's important too is that it's not coming at a cost of their defensive fundamentals either. So yeah, lots of excited to be with Pico's start to the year, because he's just bringing that dynamic energy, and it's kind of changing the way they view the attack. And it looks like when everyone's healthy, the battle is between White and Krylak. Of course, White's always going to start, but it looks like the avenue for the front three to click is if it's Krylak or White, one of them on the field at the same time, and getting Pico, getting Gold, and then Ahmed and Adekugbe, heck, who, you know, we can talk about how he looked in his return, or Raposo, the wide fullbacks kind of supporting that front three.
I think the other thing I just wanted to give a shout out to from this match is, hey, second on the team, you know, in goals plus assists and tied for the lead in goal scoring through five matches, Ryan Raposo. Performances have not always been perfect, but, you know, man's finding a way to get on the end of chances right now and doing so in critical moments. And, you know, I think that it goes to show that at a position where the Whitecaps have maybe yet to find a permanent solution, Raposo is certainly very good squad depth to have. And, you know, again, I think that's something where the fact that you're getting these contributions from Raposo, Pico, where maybe you're expecting in the long term Brian White and Ryan Gold to take the lion's share of that load, the fact that you're getting depth scoring even when things aren't going perfectly is an encouraging sign, I think. Says something positive about Vanni Sartini's system and obviously positive about Raposo as well. So yeah, all things to kind of watch as we go into this upcoming weekend. You know, do we see both Pico and Ahmed starting again? Is Brian White back to full fitness? Those will be interesting ones. Alex, you want to butt in here with something?
Yeah, no, I just want to note, just like, I like that you brought up depth, so I just want to quickly point on it while it's fresh in my mind. That was a huge question heading into this season. Last year, in MLS play only, just because I have those numbers up, Ryan Gold, 23 G plus A. Brian White, 19 G plus A. The next best guy, Julian Gressel with 8. That's pretty good. After that, Simon Becher with 5. He's also no longer here. It's Ranko Veselinovic is 4, with 4, tied with Pedro Vite and Berhalter, the only remaining guys who are, like, after White and Gold. So the fact Pico already has 2+2, he's already matched with, you know, the best returning guy in Veselinovic, Berhalter, and Vite, Raposo with 3, right? Like, that's what Ali Ahmed provided last year. And, you know, of course, Ali Ahmed was more of a transitional piece last year than a G+A guy. And I think that's going to change. And
all of these, Raposo and Pico this season, they're not playing 85 minutes for 5 matches. I mean, Pico, it's been what? It's 2 starts and 4 appearances. Raposo, I think it's been 3 starts, 3 appearances or something like that. But, you know, like, it's neither of these guys have been full on match in, match out starters, which is, I think just makes it even more impressive. Five matches played for Raposo, three starts. Just wanted to correct myself there. But yeah, overall, these are not guys that have gone 85 minutes all five matches, which again, I think just adds to that point about the comparison to last year. And to me, that has to be encouraging at this point.
Well, it's huge because I think a lot of the question was what happens to that Gressel offense? And clearly, as we see there, last year that wasn't replicated. Larea brought a lot in terms of winning penalties and getting in the right areas. We kind of mentioned he just wasn't at that final product soon, but in terms of actual G plus A, they never really replaced Gressel. Because yeah, Ahmed too. Ahmed and Larea did a great job of replacing the chances, but not actually maybe the actual G plus A. And that's encouraging to see Pico's doing it, Raposo's doing it, and you know Brian White and Ryan Gold are going to score. You'd almost put money on it. Like, you know, even when Ryan Gold's in a scenario like this, five games, one goal, no assists, he's looked, you know, relatively great across the five games. And I think in another five game sample, he easily could have had two goals, three assists, or three goals, three assists. Like, I think
I was going to say too, as much as we've been dumping on Demir Krylak, they're going to find a role for him eventually, and he's going to get some goals and assists. I mean, he already has the one, but I have faith that, you know, even if he can't move that well, they're going to figure it out eventually.
Well, that's it. Krylak, we can say, has, you know, struggled, I guess. I think it's fair to put that label. He has two goals in seven games, all comps, if you consider the Champions Cup. Look, for a depth piece, again, those are the sort of contributions. I look back at those numbers I was looking at. You would have taken that. Heck, the fact he already has a goal. And yeah, I'm just looking through the list now. Vite feels like he's going to be good for, you know, a couple goals, couple assists as the year goes on. Feels like the defenders, I mean, Ranko already has an assist. Laborda has a goal. You know, there's going to continue to be offense from there. And yeah, I think Ali Ahmed is the real wild card. So no, I think a hat tip has to go to the depth scoring, because White and Gold will figure it out. Fact that, you know, White's now dealt with this concussion. Sounds like he's back this week in some capacity, unless, you know, anything changes last minute, which is huge news. I think that'll, even if he's 30 minutes off the bench, I think that'll be a big boost. But no, you can only applaud that depth scoring, because that'll pay off as White and Gold find their feet. But yeah, that's kind of the story of the offense. I think it's been hard to gauge because the numbers haven't been as maybe gaudy as last year. But I think what we've also seen in a game like this, if they can have more games like this where they scored three goals, they generate a lot of chances by stretching defenses out, it will get better over time. Because I think, you know, a couple weeks ago, they had less than a XG4 per game, and they've already pushed their numbers up to like 1.06 XG4 and a couple of good performances. They'll be back into higher up the table as it goes. So yeah, it's funny enough, I don't feel all as concerned about the offense as I maybe did a few weeks ago. I think, again, it's funny. It was as simple as maybe Pico is the solution. I'm very curious to see what happens long-term. Like, is Pico going to be the guy over the course of the season? Because I think that's something where it's like, look, he is 34. He has a lot of international duty coming up with Haiti that will keep him out. Like, he also can't expect him to play every game. So I'm very curious to know what's going to happen there. Like, is it just going to mean we see more Levante Johnson? Are we going to see more Ali Ahmed up front? Do they bring in a guy this summer, either a new DP or a U22 guy who can be a Pico but younger? We'll have to see. But no, I think it's encouraging to see that they've seemed to figure out the right profile. So now we'll see going forward, do they make what we'll call the Caleb Wilkins theorem? Like, do they have the two fast guys in the front three or not? Because that seems to have fixed everything. But look, let's talk about the defense. I mean, Sam, I mean, I'll just throw it to you, opening thoughts, because I'm sure we'll go back and forth on this for a fair bit. Like, what to make of the defense? Again, I'm team, maybe it's not popular. Numbers continue to be good. I continue to see good things, but you allow two goals. You almost throw the game away. What do we make of the defense right now? Because it feels like they should be doing a little better than they have, at least in the GA category.
So maybe it's because we've spent so much time around Vanni Sartini now that we've been indoctrinated into this zonal defensive philosophy. I feel like I have a lot more time for it than I used to. But I feel, for my preferences at least, that Vanni spoke on it pretty accurately after the match, where it's like, listen, zonal marketing, it's a utopia. You know, the zones work in theory, when you execute it at 100%, but obviously you can't execute it 100%. So the goal is just to get as close to that utopia as you can. And yeah, there were two, you know, there are two deviations from the principles in this match. Both of them committed by Tristan Blackman. And, you know, one was tracking a man. You know, Blackman didn't necessarily, it didn't look on the face of it like he made a huge error that led to the Evander goal, but he vacates that space tracking a runner that he should have just let run offside or passed off in the zone. And he tracked the runner. Evander is talented enough. We talked about the Brazilians in Portland that they love to shoot. I mean, we were laughing during the match that, you know, the striker for for the Timbers is wide open asking for the ball. And all the wide players for Portland want to do is take speculative shots from outside the box. That's their bread and butter. So you leave that kind of space, they're going to punish you. And I mean, it was a beautiful hit from Evander. Great to see in person, but obviously not for a Whitecaps supporter. And then the second one, I mean, Blackman just gets beat to the ball in the cross. He's looking around like someone else is supposed to have that zone, but it's like, no, man, that's all you. That's not on Alessandro Schopp behind you. It's not on someone else in front of you. You know, it's his zone. He's got to commit to that ball. And so, yeah, two mistakes in a match where, like, weirdly, I, you know, you hate saying this when you give up two, but like overall, it was actually pretty solid defensive performance that was kind of highlighted by those two errors. So again, I think, you know, if you look at the underlying numbers, all the boring kind of stat nerd stuff, they're defending way better this year. This is a huge improvement from last season already. So I think this showing just stands out because it's an outlier from the way they started the season. And it's also, I guess, worth mentioning that, you know, this is two blown leads now. They have had this feeling when it gets to the 55th, 60th minute, all of a sudden the other team gets a little bit more dangerous and those chances creep closer and closer. So I don't know if there's something match management wise they can do just to keep these guys engaged or to, I don't know what it is. Maybe there's something mentally going on there that the Whitecaps can look at. But I think in terms of tactics, in terms of structural stuff, I really like what the team's doing, and it feels like they'll have a good handle on things in the long run. Again, this doesn't necessarily need to be a top five team in MLS defensively, especially if Brian White and Ryan Gold come around as we expect them to. They just need to be solid, average, or slightly better than average. And I think so far they're certainly on track to do so. So yeah, I thought the Utvik substitution for Laborda was interesting. I mean, we were talking about it in person and kind of wondering why that happened. A bunch of people online seem to think that Laborda had a weak match and that his passing was off. And, you know, I didn't think his passing wasn't particularly sharp, especially for someone who's generally so good on the ball. But given what we saw from Blackman in the couple zonal breakdowns, I was really surprised to see Laborda be the guy that came off, and Utvik looked good in his stead. Nice to see him get a couple more minutes. But yeah, that's a lot about defending, Alex. Over to you for your thoughts. I mean, we shared a lot of these with each other already, but curious for what you have to add.
Yeah, well, I agree with the zonal marking, right? I think it's the cardinal sin, I dare I say, what Blackwood did on the first goal. I think, honestly, I'd implore everyone to watch it and just like, say maybe you're not as familiar with the zonal system, or at least the Whitecaps zonal system, very unique. They defend like, you know, a legit 3-4-3. Vanni Sertini will tell anyone that listens, he's the only manager in the world that does a true back three. Like, you know, maybe it's a bit of hyperbole. There's, you know, maybe one or two in the world, but he is right. It's very rare. And, you know, part of that is it's a lot of pressure on the outside CBs. It's a lot of pressure on the midfielders. It's a lot of pressure in the pressure, aka how you press. A lot of little things have to go right. But watch that first Portland goal, the Evander goal. Don't get drawn into the, because I think what kind of happens is you get drawn into that 1-2 that happens in the middle. That happens. Look, you have a double pivot. Kubas isn't going to tackle everything. But then, yeah, just track Blackman. Watch the way he stands, sees the runner, follows the runner, vacates a space that in an ideal world he's there. Ranko Veselinovic is there, Laborda there. They're at least able to disrupt the shot from Evander. Instead, he gets an uncontested shot, and a player of his quality is putting that in 9 times out of 10, probably 10 times out of 10. You can give him that benefit of the doubt with how good of a finisher he is in those sorts of moments. And yeah, that's the cardinal sin. You can't do that. You can't follow the space that way. It could be tough, especially when there's a breakdown like that where, you know, maybe you see Kubas get beaten. Your mind just kind of reverts to, oh, panic stations are coming at us. Let's compensate. But it really comes down to your structure. And look, you know, you can argue all you want about zonal marking and what you think of back threes. It's a preference thing. Some people will swear by the back four. Some will swear by the back five. Some will swear by the back three. I think, you know, which camp Vanny falls in. Some swear by man-to-man. Some swear by zonal. Some swear by both. There's benefits and detriments to both. We could have a great discussion all day about benefits teams have had with certain systems. But look, the Whitecaps have stuck with the 3-4-3. They've stuck with a very rigid zonal system, and the numbers speak for themselves. So far through five, in terms of goals against per game, they're bottom 10 in MLS, or sorry, top 10. I just say like they're at the, I mean, I've reversed it. They're top 10 in terms of goals against. They're fourth right now in expected goals against, saying that they're right now, they're one of the teams allowing the fewest amount of chances. And they could be doing even better based on the actual goals. But as we saw against RSL with the couple of breakdowns, as we now saw here against Portland, they just have to keep discipline. And that's where I'm interested to see what we might see out of Vanni Sartini. Because look, I don't think much changes for the most part. The back three have all had very good moments. I think Matias Laborda has been excellent this season. I think Ranko Veselinovic, he had a really good game in this one and made up for the RSL game where he kind of made that one error that kind of sunk the Whitecaps. And I think that was a good bounce back. Blackman, he continues to have relatively good games. Other than these two errors, he's continued to be solid all year. So I think he sticks with it. But I do wonder, just throwing it out there, might we see an Utvik start soon just to shake things up? Just to kind of, the fact that he's been, and I found it really interesting, because we don't always see that with Vanni Sartini with center backs. We didn't see it with a lot of the options last year. He's been kind of easing Utvik in, you know, a little 10 minutes here, a little 5 minutes there, a little 12-minute cameo here. Is he kind of, you know, is this maybe a hint that we might be due an Utvik start soon just to kind of shake things up, throw a different name back there? Because maybe that's the one thing with the zonal system. And especially for the Whitecaps, they're not facing that many chances, right? I do wonder if sometimes in a game, it can be harder to be concentrated when you're in a moment like that. It's like, we've been defending so well, I can let off. And then, you know, it's pro soccer. It's top players at the top level. You do that, you get beat. Maybe a guy like Utvik comes in and that kind of sets the sharpness among the starting three. Like, oh, okay, we've got this guy here who can come in and, you know, step up if we do slip up.
Oh, so it's been interesting because Vanny's kind of gone back and forth on wanting a deep squad, kind of limiting the squad and having a more consistent starting 11. Again, this is something that, because he was more of like an educator and then he's gone to the first team side, he's had to adapt and evolve some of his principles. I mean, I think you love the idea of like running a squad 18 deep in theory, but then you get into the heat of, you know, managing a team in a league like MLS and you realize, I actually don't know how realistic that is to, you know, kind of do platoon substitutions all the time. But Levante Johnson and Utvik are the two that these past couple of weeks they've seen more and more minutes. And yeah, I thought there was really no reason necessarily to make a center back sub in that match against Portland. But I think it may have been, you know, this is a guy that's obviously been in training with the Whitecaps a while now. He has his feet wet, you know, he's played some exhibition stuff, and okay, it's time to see a little bit more match action to make sure that he's ready to go. And you know, you might need someone like him. You need someone like him to be sharp come Canadian Championship and Leagues Cup, you know, managing multiple competitions and stuff like that. So I think that's a good shout that we might see something from him soon. Yeah, do they change up the tactics at all? Who comes out? Is it Laborda or Blackman? Do they put Utvik in the middle? It doesn't feel like they're going to, but you never know. It's certainly possible. Definitely something to watch out for. I don't know if it'll happen this week. I would think off of a win that the Whitecaps probably run it back as similarly as they can. But that remains to be seen. I guess something to shout out from this match, while we're on the topic of sort of depth guys coming off the bench, Sam Adekubi, welcome back. Made a tremendous cross, tremendous ball. It was more of like a through ball than a cross, I guess, but to kind of spring the Whitecaps in attack that eventually led to the Ryan Raposo goal. Just great to see him back in action. I think he's, you know, he can really fill that Alessandro Schopp midfielder playing as a wing back type for the Whitecaps, and probably, you know, adds a bit more on the defensive side, probably adds a little bit more on the ball long term. I think a very good running mate in those wide areas for Ali Ahmed long term, or just, you know, really Sam has a lot of tactical flexibility. There's a lot of different things you could do. So I just didn't want him to be forgotten. Obviously, it's been a bit of a tough off season for Sam, trying to get himself back to full fitness, full health. But another big step in a positive direction this past weekend.
Yeah, I like it. That's a good spot to kind of end off the match specific talk. I agree. Adekugbe, don't forget about him. I think we've said it in the preseason show. Like, he's someone where he's fit, he's clicking. He can be a top three fullback or at least left back in MLS. Not unreasonable. Like, to have a player of his quality, someone, you know, coming off a very good stint in Turkey, you know, someone who's really grown a lot as his player. And you just see it in this short time, right? He hasn't played in months because of a knee injury, and he looked quick first off, which is great, and it shows the value of, you know, being patient and how the Whitecaps have managed him. That, you know, maybe he makes that same sprint in week one, and they kind of rush him back, and he feels his knee, and then you're in a bit of a purgatory. And so it's good to see how, first off, fresh he looked, and the, you know, helps create the goal at the end with a great run and cross. And yeah, I think the quality that he'll bring on the ball is, because what I've seen of him so far since his return to MLS, you know, it's something where we haven't maybe seen it fully manifest itself in end product, but his crossing, his through passing, his delivery, you can see that quality he has. It's a step above a lot of players on the roster. And that's huge because, I mean, look, he's bringing that, right? Like, it's someone who is not that long removed from playing for a Galatasaray, from being in the Hatashpor system from, you know, in his time in Norway. And I think that quality is going to be a massive down that left side, and just from the wingbacks in general, because, you know, they don't really have a lot of that at that wingback position. You know, because a guy like Ali Ahmed, he brings quality in the way he generates chances. And I think he's growing a lot as someone who can cross the ball, be dangerous in his shooting. But the way that, you know, Adekugbe brings that, and just it's just, you know, that's not a knock on anyone else. That's more of a credit to Adekugbe. He just has that extra oomph to it. And I think the fact, if you compare him and Ahmed together at wingback, and then have a guy like Raposo coming off the bench within that is a very tasty proposition. Because, yeah, I mean, man, you're going to have Adekugbe running and whipping in crosses on the left. You're going to have Ahmed running, beating defenders, shooting, assisting. It's going to be a lethal combination. So, no, definitely excited to have Adekugbe back. And yeah, it was probably the big positive at the end of the game for the Whitecaps, especially that he was factored into the winner.
Well, so as you mentioned, that kind of, I think, wraps up our uber specific points about the Vancouver Whitecaps against Portland Timbers. But Alex, you brought up something interesting pre-show that we should just touch on briefly here before we maybe talk about the week that was in MLS and then look forward to TFC. So the question was this: we have a 5-game sample size, 7 if you include CONCACAF Champions Cup. I get tripped up because I'm still like, is it league? Is it cup? I have to think about it a bit. Alas, you know, by the way, Tigres still motoring on in Champions Cup. Giving Columbus a handful, and some interesting stuff going on there. We'll talk about in the MLS section as well. But anyways, 5-game MLS sample size for the Whitecaps. The question is, okay, they're on 10 points. They're, you know, tied for topping the West, or tied for topping the West in points per game. So from like a pure statistical table perspective, they're off to a really good start. But the question is this Vancouver Whitecaps team actually good? Are they, have the performances, you know, is the faith in the team reflective of where they sit in the standings at the moment? Because Alex, you were mentioning to me, and I think I've heard the same. There's mixed reactions on that front. I think some people are a little more like myself, where you go, hey, there's a lot of room for improvement, and they're still managing to get points. I like this position the team's in. And then there's others that kind of look at, you know, look at blowing a lead to RSL, look at dropping points against Charlotte, looking at two road wins and kind of wondering how sustainable is this in the long term. You know, who's gonna provide the goal scoring consistently, because we haven't seen it from anyone specifically yet. And I think there are two sides to this coin. So it's an interesting question, at least through five matches. This is what happens when a team's, you know, not off to a really slow start. Rather than panicking, you have to find reasons to maybe panic or worry about what's going on.
Yeah, this is what happens too when you've got you know, someone who's put a lot of time and schooling into philosophy, throwing that over from your perspective, and then you've got someone who's self like myself, what, 5 years in university, I've done my fair share of theory. You know, sometimes you just get lost in the theory of, okay, we're seeing them win, but why is it? You know, is this real? Is this a mirage?
Well, because I think some people might say that. Now, it's a long time to think back, but there is the possibility that if you remove the scores and the results from the equation, people might have been more positive about the Whitecaps were doing 5 or 6 matches into last season. Because it was like, it was positive, it was chaotic, there was lots of good stuff going on, they just weren't getting results. This is kind of the opposite. The football has not been like the most attractive thing on earth, except for short spurts, but they're getting the results. So I think there's no questioning the result, but there is maybe like a stylistic or sustainability question to be asked.
Yeah, and 100%. I think it's an important discussion to have, just because it is hard to know how to feel. Because even you leave the Portland game and you're like, it's 3 points, it's a win, you scored 3 goals. It just, you know, if of course you feel, you know, if you're looking at it from Whitecaps' perspective, you have every reason to feel positive. But then you step back, you're like, was that actually like, is the 2-goal lead blown in the second half a worry? The way they kind of took the foot off the gas pedal, you know, the way they made it a game of out of something there where they shouldn't have. Those are all questions to be had. And yeah, it is really interesting to answer the question of, is this team actually good? I mean, first off, I think 5 games. I think know what this team is at around, you know, 12, 14. Of course, that's natural. That's stats. You start to get a good variation of teams. The hardest part about playing all these teams early is you also don't know what version of other teams you're getting. You may think you have a hard schedule, like, oh, you're playing this team. They're all great last year. And then comes the end of the year, all three of those teams you said were great are all like 15, 14, 13 in the West, right? Like, you don't know where, how good the teams are actually that you're playing actually are until, you know, later down the road. But yeah, no, I think from what we've seen so far, I think there's a lot to be encouraged about. I mean, of course, we've said that. I think the fact that the depth scoring has been there, that's huge. But yeah, I think overall how I'd try to sum it up is that what's most encouraging is that while things don't look the greatest, and there are a few concerns such as, you know, White and Gold maybe not clicking yet to that maximum potential, to some of the defensive errors, you know, to say whatever the RSL game was, to the slack of speed in the front three. For the most part, I think what you're relying on to be a good team is sustainable. And I think the big one is the defense, because it was a point that I mentioned a few weeks ago. It's about how I was reading that in title winners, historically, those, like, there was more of a benefit to having a greater defense to having a greater offense. Ideally, most title winners are good at both, right? But in a world where, I don't know, say the upper echelon of a league is 65 goals, and then it's, you know, the upper echelon defense is the 25 goals against, you'd much rather be a team with 50 goals for and 25 against versus 60 goals for with 45 against. The Whitecaps last year were the latter. The fact that this year, yes, some of the goals against, you know, lately they've been inflated by 2 against RSL, 2 against Portland. For the most part, if they keep defending like this, they'll probably finish with what, 34 goals against, 35 goals against. and still probably score around 50, 60, they're trending more towards what you need to be a championship team, which is be solid defense. Defense wins championships. We've mentioned that. We've been impressed with the structure. From there, a lot of the things that you're worried about, white and gold, historically, they've shown enough that over time, their number will be called. They'll make things happen. That's huge. You now have depth scoring early on that it's been able to, that this run's been able to happen despite white and gold happening. And yeah, I think there's overall a lot to be encouraged by. I think there are some interesting questions where you throw in, what does this mean for the future, especially the fact that you remain flexibility to their roster and what things could look like if they got the DP or the U22 spots that they could take advantage of now, or of course, if the rules change as they're rumored to, because who loves nothing more than a mid-season rule change in MLS? Like, there's potential for more, but I think it's important to look at what has been good within this, because I think it's been easy to kind of sometimes get lost in what hasn't been good, right? Such as collapses or some slow halves and whatnot, that you kind of forget that, okay, good improvements like the defense actually means a lot more than we realize, right? Because last year was, oh man, they're generating chances for fun. When they score, it's going to be great. But then you're kind of like, ooh, they're also leaking chances, and that doesn't really correct itself overnight, say, right?
Well, I'm thinking back to something you said earlier. I can't remember if this was actually while we were recording or prior to recording, but, you know, last year you were relying on things like, oh, Sergio Cordova, hopefully he's going to find his form eventually. It's like, that seems like something that's, you know, a bet you're concerned about. Whereas thinking that Rheingold and Brian White are going to pick up, thinking that a good structural defensive unit that has the odd error or deviation, that's something that when you're working on this system, which they've been working on since the preseason, they're only going to refine that if they keep it consistent. That's only going to get better, one would think, as the season goes on. Sure, teams are going to adjust and do things to try to stretch you and expose you, but I think that consistency, having Laborda, Blackman, Veselinovic locked in from match one, I think is huge. Like, the Whitecaps didn't have that last season. It was a lot of Javane Brown, Luis Martins, back and forth, you know, inconsistency. Those were more serious, I think, fundamental, not necessarily fixable problems. Whereas on the flip side, even when it comes to acquisitions, I think like bringing in a complementary attacking piece, that's, you know, I think there's a lot of different ways of doing that. Whereas maybe finding that crucial center back or finding a goalkeeper, you know, finding a box-to-box midfielder, those are some more serious problems where integration can be a real issue. But I think there's, you know, lots of dangerous attackers out there, I'm sure, that the Whitecaps have on their list that they can maybe target this summer. And obviously we've talked about how really those summer acquisitions tend to be more successful anyway. So yeah, I guess to summarize, that's kind of my thought, is that some of the, despite the fact the Whitecaps had a lot of positives last season, the things that ailed them were kind of hard to fix on the fly. Who's going to score outside of the big two? They can't defend consistently. Those are problems that are hard to fix in season. Whereas I think for the Whitecaps this season, just getting their best players to be their best players, to score goals, and then just ironing out little things in what is a solid system, I feel like those are fixable problems, in addition to, you know, bringing in someone who can contribute 5 and 5 in the summer, you know, if not more, with some upside, those seem like attainable goals for the rest of the season. So that's where I'm at least at the moment. You know, maybe we get 10 matches in and my viewpoint's different, but that's kind of where I'm going to hold my position. I mean, what I said third or fourth in the West to start the season in our preview show. I think at this point, I'm feeling good about that.
Yeah, I honestly, I'd echo. I'd say so far, I mean, it's 5 games, so I'm not going to sit here and we're going to hand out trophies and pat ourselves on the back. I think it's 29 games too early for that, and we will not do that. That's not the style. But I think I'm going to call, to finish this off before we move on, I'm going to call back to something we do in the preseason, and it's floor and ceiling, right? We always talk about floor and ceiling. I think what we're seeing right now is the Whitecaps having a much bigger floor than last year. Because if this is what struggle or, you know, them not being at their best looks like, it's still putting points on the board. It's still
like higher floor, you mean, essentially. Because yeah. I think last season it was like they could have been the best team in the league, but they could also be bottom 10. Whereas I think the variance this year feels smaller.
Well, that's it. That's what I was going to mention. It's good you brought it up. Last year's ceiling was incredible. Like when the XG was hitting like six, they beat Houston. Again, I don't know why I love calling back to that game, just because I've been in awe because it was a record-setting game. Whitecaps scored six goals. They beat the Dynamo 6-2. Like the Dynamo were, what, one of the top five, top 10 teams in MLS? Like on their day when the Whitecaps were clicking, you had Gressel making late runs, White and Gold being White and Gold, you had Vite hitting pot shots from 40 yards for fun, Kubas being cool. Like it was fun, right? Like the ceiling was high, but the problem was you had Houston 6-2 and you had, you know, pick your, what is it? Like seven or eight games where you had dropped points at home where you probably should have won. It was frustration. It was, we should have done better.
What was it like, nil-nil against Colorado Rapids or something like that?
That's the exact game I was thinking. Like that was the floor. It was like, oh, stinky. That was a bit, you're kind of left with the game. You're like, that was very roller coaster, right? What we're seeing now, I think, is a higher floor approach of the defense being consistent in both formation, but also personnel raised the floor. The fact that it's another year of, you know, who the core guys are. It's Takaoka. It's Ranko Blackman. Laborde has now stepped into that group. It's Kubas. It's Vite. It's Ahmed. It's Gold. It's White. Now you got guys like, it's going to be Adekugbe when he's fit. Like there's that. I think this team just has a higher floor. And I think that's, I'm excited because at least you know that if they keep putting along like this, they're still going to be very competitive and push for top three. And I think what's curious to see is, I still think there's a decent floor, right? Because we haven't seen the best of White and Gold, which will increase that ceiling, a lot more. As we've seen over the years, it does. We can still see a bit more from a few other individuals. We're still seeing Ahmed and Adekugbe, who are two very, very key pieces, get up to full health. And we've seen glimpses of already what Ahmed will do when he's fully healthy. He's going to be an absolute menace for teams to deal with. So that will help. I think that's all. That's a lot encouraging. Where, yeah, I agree. I think at this point last year, we're sitting like, man, the ceiling's so high for this team, but they're just not getting results. Whereas now you're sitting there like, who knows with the ceiling? Maybe it's not as high as last year, but that doesn't matter, where the floor is going to bring you up to a much better position, because it's what the floor is what killed them last year. If they had a consistent floor, they easily could have been a top two team in the West. It was there for the taking. It looks like that's going to be the case again this year. So yeah, super excited to see where this develops. But I guess on that note, unless you have any other floor or ceiling raisers, we're going to go quickly around MLS in five before diving into the Derby match. That is TLC. Is it a Derby match? Maybe we can discuss that. I know there's always mixed reaction. The true Derby match will always be Montreal if you're talking Canadian, but you know, TFC, Whitecaps continues to be a fun matchup. But this weekend, I mean, speaking of fun, speaking of chaos, we'll just do it one by one this weekend. What the heck was Colorado versus LAFC? I mean, 3-2, two late Colorado goals from Georgi Mihailovic. LAFC lets the lead go. Colorado's all of a sudden decent. Like,
well, so we're talking about, you know, floor and ceiling and variance. This is one where LAFC feels like they've introduced some variance into this. This used to be a, you know, not a can't fail team, but darn near close to can't fail. You kind of knew they would have the odd match. I mean, Whitecaps have played them tough a couple times, but for the most part, LAFC was, you know, rock solid and consistent. So far this year, it's been a bit all over the place. Obviously, you know, have Buanga just go off, and that's still going to happen, but, and they just haven't been as composed. You know, Hugo Lloris so far in goal has not really been an upgrade over Max Crepeau. You know, I think just even not having a guy like Vela emotionally, leadership wise, it seems like it's made a little bit of a difference. You know, shout out to Georgi Mihailovic for getting involved. It's been a little bit of a slow start for some of the Rapid Stars, which we've talked about, but obviously there's some sneaky good stuff in that lineup, some good young players, obviously Moise Mobido for Canada. He chipped in his, did he score in this match or was it the week before? I couldn't remember. It was this match.
Birthday goal, by the way. So, you know, shout out to him on his 24th birthday, gets his first pro goal.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a good mix in that squad of like exciting young players and then kind of proven MLS quality. So yeah, I mean, the West is wide open this year. I think it's that much is clear so far in the season. So that one was certainly fun.
Wow. Well, just to dive in quickly before we move on. All I would say with Colorado, when Bombito's in that lineup, they missed him in international break. They lost, I think it was 1-0. The goal they gave up would have been something that was right up Bombito's alley. It was like a transition moment. He's so good at killing those. This Colorado team has some upside if they can keep firing in the goals, because it feels like the defense right now, they've got a good mix between Bombito, Maxa, Zach Steffen, Keegan Rosenberry. They've got a new six whose name escapes me. Like, they've got good structure. So if they can keep, if Mihailovic can wake up, because he had a slow start, good things. Just funny thing with LAFC, I think what we're realizing is they just lost too much. Forget Villa. I'm just looking now. You forget, because it's easy to forget, Crepo gone. I think Crepo being there, maybe that's a different game. Alan Acosta, I feel like that's one that's not talked about enough. He was always slept on and how important he was defensively as the six.
Ily Sanchez is a tremendous player, but, you know, he's on the wrong side of that regression curve now as well. And I think, you know, time catches up with everyone as well. So I think the combination of losing Acosta and then another year older for Sanchez, that's, you know, where they've maybe taken a bit of a step back in that midfield.
Well, Sanchez is a ball player, right? That's his. Acosta was always kind of doing a lot of the dirty work. Another guy too, Cifuentes. That's a guy I think they sorely miss. Like a guy like Tillman, great on the ball, final end product, but he can be an absolute adventure defensively. And even just in terms of consistency and how he influences the game, I think as well, someone like Bogus, like they just had that consistency before as well. And some other names too, Mamadou Fall, right? I think it feels like Giorgio Chiellini, they haven't necessarily replaced some of those guys they lost at center back. So yeah, maybe something that's been slept on, because it feels like the narrative was, oh, there's Buonga, this LAFC team's good. I think this LAFC team's still very good. And I think they're, again, they still have a high floor where they should be pushing top three, top two, as we've mentioned all year. But who knows? Maybe it looks like that some of those departures were more key than they thought. And that currently has them sitting ninth, 7 points in six games. Going to be very interesting to see where they go from here. But yes, quickly move through Nashville, Columbus. 2-2, chaotic game. All four goals happened in the first half. So a bit of a boring second half. Fine by me. I watched the first half. So that's when all the goals were happening. Jacob Schaufelberg, assist. The other one was essentially an assist. Just didn't count for optics. It was a deflection. So essentially two assists. The big story. There's a bit of drama between the league's best coach in Wilfred Nancy and the league's best striker, you could probably call him, in Cucho Hernandez. And all of a sudden, Mr. Hernandez has missed, what is it, three games now for over a team matter, including their massive Champions Cup game against Tigres that I think they probably could have won if he was in the lineup. Trouble in paradise in Columbus? Too early to say?
I mean, it seems like it, right? You know, obviously we've heaped praise on Columbus as being the one team that maybe, you know, on their day and in terms of overall performance had stood out above the rest. But this is the kind of thing that could derail a tremendous squad, right? If your most important player, league MVP type player, is not one with the coaching staff and one with the rest of the squad. So whether this is something where it's just, you know, a strong message being sent and it's recoverable or something that really ends up ailing them in the long term, I think we're just going to have to wait and see. But I think this Columbus team, you know, still dangerous regardless. I mean, we saw they did go head to head with Tigres and took them on and are still very much in the tie. So that'll be interesting to watch out for in the second leg. And yeah, Alex, just any more crew thoughts from you?
Well, that's it. I'll quickly go again. Schaufelberg, that's all I have to say on Nashville.
Tremendous. Absolutely.
The mullet, the Tennessee water slide. But no, for Columbus, they'll be fine. Yeah, like you mentioned, they'll be fine. it might, you're going to miss Kucho. Let's not kid ourselves, but you'll be fine. You have Jason Russell-Roe who can step up at the nine, Canadian option, of course, so we won't mind that. But it is something that's worth monitoring because Wilfred Nancy has been in this situation before. Montreal fans will know he had a spat with Joey Saputo that nearly saw Nancy leave in the middle of their big season where they finished third in 22. He also pushed Victor Wanyama to the side and had Victor Wanyama's wife tweeting on how things were going rough, and there was a bit of discontentment there. For better or for worse, Nancy has a very, you know, strict way of playing and, you know, buy-in from his players that if there is a deviation, he's damned if you're a Cucho and you score for fun and you know you're cost millions of dollars, you follow the system. So I'm just very curious to see where the follow-up is, because sometimes with, you know, in this situation, players aren't always willing to walk things back. Can they find a bit of middle ground between Nancy and Cucho? If Cucho comes back, great. They're in good notes. For what it's worth, I think if you're Columbus with Tim Bezbachenko's record, I think if there's a scenario where Cucho leaves this summer because of this and you sign a new guy, he's probably the guy I'd trust the most in MLS to replace him. But for a team running it back, you'd ideally just like a full season of Cucho. You'd like a full season of... but again, Bezbachenko did it last year. Zellerian left halfway through. They brought in Diego Rossi and were just fine. So I think it's something where Columbus will be out on this, the other side, fine, but just something to keep an eye on. But lastly, before we move on to Caps, TFC, LA Galaxy, stay hot. And I think it's just we're pointing them out because they play the Whitecaps next week in what could be a 1v2 clash in the West. Who would have seen that coming heading into the season? Not very many. That would have been LAFC Seattle in week one, which clearly maybe was a, in at least in hindsight, maybe didn't age so well. Let's just say they beat Seattle and keep on rolling. A 1-0 win it is for the LA Galaxy, who, hey, after we spent the last week just saying, oh, we're a bit worried about their defense, they go out and keep a clean sheet. Although it feels like anyone can keep a clean sheet against Seattle these days with how just lifeless that attack looks. I mean, you know, the Galaxy staying hot, Seattle, you know, being at the bottom. Sam, which one surprised you most? I'd probably go Seattle, but you know what? This Galaxy team continues to make me eat my words every week.
Yeah, I mean, I think Galaxy keeping a clean sheet, impressive, even if it is against Seattle. I mean, I'm just looking at the box score from this one, and, you know, the Sounders, obviously they get scored on in the fourth minute. So then, you know, kind of game effect and stuff, they're pushing for a goal as best they can. 16 total shots, only 2 on target. Only 4 total shots on target in the match overall. But like for Seattle, that just says everything about how they attack at the moment. There's lots of positive possession. There's lots of, you know, nice little passing sequences, but actually getting that final product at the moment has just been a nightmare. And, you know, that they're still got a really good back line. You know, it's a solid spine of the team. And really from top to bottom, you know, there's a lot to like about the roster, but it's just, you know, turning chance creation into goals, finding that final product on a consistent basis has really ailed them so far this season. So, yeah, it's one of those ones where, again, I feel like I say this all the time. We've seen this with the Caskanian teams before where they start slow and then all of a sudden June, July come along and they surge. But, man, if you're the Sounders, you're venturing dangerously close into, you know, territory where you dig yourself a bit of a significant hole here to get out of. So, you know, they need a guy like Pedro de la Vega back as fast as physically possible and then kind of see where they go from there.
Yeah, look, I think it's going to be hard to write the Sounders off this early because of pedigree, because of the fact they've dealt with some injuries, namely de la Vega. But look, there's huge question marks that they're going to have to answer. Their back line has been out of sorts, which is a surprise, right? Like Gamar, Jackson Reagan, Nuhu, those were guys that were best 11 candidates last year. So can they get a bit of that defensive structure back? But look, they're missing Joao Paulo. And that continues to be a theme. No Joao Paulo, no party. 22, they win the Champions Cup, or Champions League as the time I can actually say it that time for once. But they lost Joao Paulo in that final and they missed the playoffs for the first time in forever. This team seems to go as Joao Paulo is, so that's something to watch out for, is what can they do to step up and replace him? And yeah, it's where the heck are the goals going to come from, especially with that there being no clear Ladero replacement. Because yeah, Rusnak can step up, but it just feels like this team was so reliant on Ladero that you haven't seen them find that click. So look, interesting times. The Whitecaps play Seattle after the LA Galaxy. So you're wondering, oh, why are we spending all this time and air on the Sounders? Look, the Sounders Galaxy game offers two direct previews of the next games after TFC for the Caps. Something to note, the Whitecaps haven't won in Seattle since, what, 2016 or something like that? It's been like 8 or 9 years. Might even be 2015. The fact they played them in 2 weeks and the Whitecaps in good form, Seattle not, that's something to keep an eye on. But on that note, that's MLS in more than five, because turns out we nerd out a lot more for these games that we watch than we realize. And hey, it's fun to talk about, especially in this case with the Galaxy in Seattle being relevant to the Caps, who play them soon. And look, Colorado, LAFC, those are teams they'll see down the road, especially if they stay hot. And in Colorado's case, they stay hot and push up the table. Maybe they'll be of relevance. But the Whitecaps back in action this week against TFC. We're going to be back with you after a quick break. Alrighty, second half of the show, or, you know, maybe the end of the third quarter. Of course, the break coming a little later, but, you know, nice to break up the listening before diving into this. But look, like we mentioned, it's Derby weekend again. Whitecaps, TFC. It's actually been a pretty entertaining fixture over the last couple of years, despite them only playing each other once in MLS. You know, a couple Canadian championship meetings will help. That fall of 2020, where they played each other like 5 million times, or aka 3 times in that Canadian series, also helped. But no, this Vancouver TFC, they always end up being good matchups. I mean, interconference game, this is a big opportunity for the Whitecaps against what is a very, very wounded TFC side, let's just say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is something where obviously the vibes were very high through the first couple matches of the MLS season. John Herdman getting his guys inspired and involved. You know, you got Insigne leaping into Herdman's arms on the sideline, and then, you know, everyone after the match getting together, and this group just looking completely different than the last season. But last weekend, it was a bit of a comeuppance for TFC. You know, they've been sort of outperforming their expected goals and maybe playing in a way that was a little bit unsustainable in the long term. And injuries obviously haven't helped. A trifecta of hamstring issues: Sean Johnson, Richie Larea, Lorenzo Insigne. Insigne out for 6 odd weeks, it looks like. Richie's going to be out 3-4 months. I mean, he had surgery on the hamstring, so I have to imagine that one's going to take a while. And then Sean Johnson sounds like it's touch and go this week, depending on how he's progressing. But obviously, those are three key players. And even prior to this stuff going on, I think there was still a question of, okay, outside Bernadeschi and Insigne, who's going to provide offensive consistency up front? You know, DeAndre Kerr, Owusu, Ayo Akinola when he sees the pitch, Jonathan Osorio, who plays a false nine against SKC. It's been a rotating cast, and there really hasn't been consistent forward play, you know, certainly from the number nine spot. So that's something to watch out for. On the flip side, in terms of pressing, defensive structure, intensity, aggressiveness, Herdman has brought a lot of that to the squad. It's been notable. Vinny Sartini really pointed it out that, listen, when we get the ball in tight quarters, we know that TFC is going to pressure us and try to win it back as quickly as possible. So the Whitecaps are going to have to deal with those moments effectively, not get caught in like that press counter press scenario where Toronto can maybe jump on them. But I think if the Whitecaps can handle those moments, then, you know, if they have Pico and Ahmed running in space, there certainly feels like there's goals in this for Vancouver. They if they can survive that pressure and intensity that a John Herdman team brings, it would take a moment of brilliance, I feel like, from a Bernadeschi to really keep Toronto in this one.
It's fitting what you've just outlined about what to expect from TFC off the ball. Very committed, very organized. They play kind of a hybrid, like Herdman did with the men's national team, where it's a back three in possession and it can kind of mold around off of it and usually becomes some sort of four. He really likes that sort of rotation and has done well with it. And then offensively, there's two counting numbers that really back up your point. First off, defense. They've only allowed 5 goals. Like, that's very good considering 3 of them were in that SKC game, which was probably their worst of the season by a good amount. So that's encouraging. Only 5 goals against, 3 in one game. So that's 2 goals against in their other 5 games. Those are numbers that you will take any day of the week. And then some from a Toronto perspective. But on the flip side, 6 goals in 6 games. An average of 1 goal per game. They've scored more than 1 goal in a game just once. It was every other game they've scored. They got shut out in their first game against Cincinnati. Then it was 1 against New England. Enough to win because they had a clean sheet. 1-0 against Charlotte. Again, they got enough to win. They lost 2-1 to NYCFC. Their defense slipped up. The only other game this season where they've conceded goals. They got back on track. They scored 2 goals for the first time against Atlanta, but that was the international break. Atlanta was missing Almada and Giakoumakis, so a bit of a rough week for them. And then, of course, this weekend against SKC. So I think that sums it up well. Look, this TFC team, I imagine they're going to take a big step up after, you know, slipping against SKC. They're a bit sloppy, especially in that first half of that game. The game got way more open than they've been for TFC in the first 5. So that's really been their secret. When they're at their best, the games have been really cagey. They've been doing a good job of blocking off that middle and that sort of 4-4-2 almost that it is off the ball. That's been good to see from them. But then, yeah, it got way too open. So expect that. But if you're the Whitecaps, I think you have to be very encouraged because the Whitecaps defense, we've sung their praises. It's been very elite. Right now, TFC's lone avenue of attack just seems to be reliance on individuals. And it works when you have Lorenzo Insigne. It's Lorenzo Insigne. He scored 2 bangers. He's, you know, having the time of his life. But with him not in the lineup, Federico Bernardeschi hasn't really been able to match that. Tyree Spicer looked good, but, you know, this is still an MLS draft pick for first couple games in the league. DeAndre Kerr was one of the team's leading scorers last year, but he's been battling an injury. It's not been the greatest start, let's just say, for Prince Owusu, no relation to Leonard, if I'm not mistaken, from a Whitecaps perspective. And, you know, neither has it been for Ayo Akinola, as both strikers don't really seem to fit the system. Pretty much it seems to be the hope is get something out of Bernadeschi. So if you're the Whitecaps, you keep your structure and you dare TFC to beat you with an individual moment of magic, that's a bet you'd probably take, right?
Well, that was just the thing for me looking at this matchup. As much as I feel like last weekend was a bit of it, it at least had the potential to not be a great matchup for Vancouver defensively because, okay, Vancouver has a system where they play, you know, a true 3 in a zone at the back, which means that, you know, the poaching stuff in the box, they do a pretty good job of limiting. But what do they allow? They allow maybe some of those crosses. They allow some of those dangerous shots from outside the box. Obviously, the Brazilians on Portland, you know, that's their favorite thing to do. So that was a bit like, okay, there, you know, there could be some dangerous stuff here. Again, you know, Bernadeschi's maybe that guy that can do a little bit of that. But otherwise, when Toronto's biggest problem has been getting that presence in the box, you know, someone who can score the dirty goals, just kind of like create high XG chances with kind of, you know, relatively low effort level, they don't have anyone who's done that consistently. And so that takes a big stress off this Whitecaps defensive unit if they're not super worried about defending that. I just feel like, yeah, there's maybe not enough diversity in terms of attack in this TFC team to give a Whitecaps defensive unit any kind of struggle when they've really been, you know, pretty buttoned up at the back. You know, again, if there's not those guys running off the shoulder, making those runs that you're forcing Tristan Blackman to track, then the system's not stressed. And I feel like they'll be just fine. So, you know, it remains to be seen how that works out in practice. does John Herdman have anything up his sleeve? It does seem too that, you know, from years of watching John Herdman Canadian men's national teams, I feel like sometimes the defensive intensity and even like the possession patterns and buildup with Herdman are much better than like the final product attacking. I feel like that's kind of a hallmark of where he's strong tactically. I mean, as someone who's covered the Canadian national team in far greater depth than pretty much anyone, Alex, I guess I'm curious for your thoughts there, but that's kind of been my impression of Herdman from a distance. Is obviously his teams play a very identifiable way and he has that charisma and character to get everyone committed. But I wonder sometimes with like the final product, you know, whether it was like a Laren and a David for Canada, sometimes it was like, man, can we not get more out of these guys up front?
Yeah, it's an interesting observation. And, you know, it's something where I'm curious to see where he evolves his team offensively, because I think it's something where he's also inherited quite the setup, because you've got two like fascinating inverted wingers in Insigne and Bernadeschi that you're obviously, you know, he's done a great job of getting them to buy in when that didn't look like it was always going to be the case, but that obviously limits how you're going to play. What I wonder is what this team's going to look like when they get Bernadeschi, Insigne underneath Kerr, because I feel like that's their front three. I wonder if DeAndre Kerr starts this weekend, because he's been working back from a bit of a knock, if I'm not mistaken. So I think if you're TFC, one area where you can maybe try to catch the Whitecaps is that speed in behind to, again, like you mentioned, the runs to distract. Doesn't mean you have to be feeding curveballs over the top, but do you catch someone sleeping with the, oh, let's just track out of my zone and stray offside for something wacky to happen with one of the wingbacks, one of the wide overloads? Because, yeah, that's a John Herdman team for you. They're going to be incredibly organized defensively, you know, at least in terms of this, how they, you know, John Herdman's Canadian teams, whether, you know, they had, for the most part, they were really good defensively. I think it was something at one point over a span of 30 games, they never allowed more than 2 goals in the game. It was until the World Cup that broke, of course, with the 4 against Croatia. But other than that, like, they actually did a really good job of limiting goals against. That's going to be John Herdman for you. Very committed both on and off the ball. The right CB knows their rotation. If, okay, I have to become a right back out of possession, a right CB, it's very organized. But yeah, offensively, I think in an ideal world, he'd probably like a little more speed out there. That's where he really thrived with Canada. I think that's why someone like Tyree Spicer has been a nice addition. I think that's where Richie Larea is going to be great when he's, you know, healthy, that speed they can bring from wide. But I think someone like Kerr as well is going to bring a different dynamic and get some more connections between the lines. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'll give a shout, because of course, you know, one of John Herdman's key staff members is video analyst Peter Galindo, friend of the show, and of course one-time guest of the show, I think back well back when in the episode. So he's of course very familiar with the Whitecaps, and you know, we'll have done a lot of his research. I wonder if he'll be pushing some of those ideas forward to Herdman, such as the speed in behind and everything. So just something to keep an eye on, because I know we just got to mention the connection that's there, and of course the key role he might end up playing there.
Yeah. So just flipping it to Vancouver now, I guess really when we're kind of looking ahead to lineups and how the Whitecaps are going to set up for this one, it feels like the one big question is obviously, you know, Brian White back at full training, but does he have any kind of setbacks, you know, anything in that concussion protocol process that knocks him back to square one? It doesn't look like it at this point, but obviously that's something to watch out for. And then that, you know, has a little bit, does it have an effect at all on the way the Whitecaps are going to play? Or is it just as simple as take out Krylak, plug in Brian White, and off you go from last weekend?
I don't want to see White start, to be honest. I think just because of the fact that he's coming off a head injury, this seems like a game that, from what a lot of I've seen of TFC, it's a lot of, there's been a, the way they defend, they kind of want teams to cross. They want teams to beat them from wide because they feel relatively confident in their ability to defend those areas. That's where someone like, I have to get used to say Kevin Long, not Shane Long, the former Irish striker that was sometimes allergic to goals. It felt like Kevin Long has been a good signing because he's been a real rock in the middle of that back three. I feel like he does a good job of organizing.
It seems like a TFC team, they want you to go wide. And I think if you're White, you don't really want that coming off a head injury, just spamming in crosses and having him deal with that. Of course, like, he's not going to play if he's not cleared. I just think it's kind of something like, why not bring him off the bench in that case? I'd say try to stretch. It's tough because TFC does a very good job of making sure the game doesn't get stretched. That's where SKC got them. SKC opened up the game. They could have scored a few earlier, but even the goal is like, yeah, they were long shots, but the moments leading up to the first long shot, for example, was just chaos. It was like, I think TFC, there was a breakdown down one of the flanks. KC got in behind with some speed, crossing the box, couple dangerous bounces, fell to the edge of the box, scored. Like, that's where the Whitecaps are really going to thrive. And what music is that? That's Ali Ahmed. That's Fafa Pico beating guys 1v1, being dangerous, causing rupture, especially with a team like TFC. There's very aggressive rotations from back three in possession to back four out of possession. For example, Shane O'Neill sometimes plays fullback in out of possession. It's worked. He's actually done an impressive job against some pretty good cast of wingers. Look, as we've seen, Ali Ahmed and Fafa Pico, especially Ali Ahmed with his 1v1 dribbling, he can have a go at pretty much any fullback in MLS. For example, maybe that's a matchup you fancy. Shane O'Neill at right back, and Ali Ahmed goes up against him and tries to bring him out, then opening up space in the middle for a Krylak or a Gold. So yeah, I think in this game, I think it's important to stick with the speed philosophy and try to get those sorts of matchups. And I think because of that, go Pico, Krylak, and Gold. And then as soon as you're ready and feel comfortable to bring in White, if it's minute 60, if it's minute 45, I'd prefer to go that route. Just because I think if you go White, maybe it would be better to ease him in a matchup like this. Like, all right, here, get thrown into Kevin Long, who's been doing a pretty good job of locking up a lot of the number nines they've faced so far this year.
So I think we're probably in agreement then that, I mean, we talked about it at Vic's start, but do we think it happens this week, or do you think they just run back the same back three and obviously Ohe Takaoka and goal?
Yeah, I think probably they run back pretty much the same team, right? I think you're going to get...
So the only one I was wondering is if you want a little more attacking spice, do you throw in a Ryan Raposo for Alessandro Schopp? Or no, you think you keep it the exact same from last weekend against Portland?
I think you run it back. They had a great first half. I think the lineup from the start, I think you go Takaoka goal, the back three writes itself in pen. But again, keep an eye on Utvik. You know, maybe it's something where Utvik gets a Galaxy starter, or maybe he gets down the... If Seattle continues to struggle, maybe you throw him in. Or look, maybe, well, I think you continue to keep an eye on the back three. Ahmed, like I mentioned, is a must for the speed and the matchup he can bring on the one flank. Vitae and Kubas middle. Look, if Adekugbe's still not ready to start, I don't think he is. I'd imagine it's probably a scenario you give him 30. Schopp kind of makes a sense because I don't mind throwing in a Raposo there, but Schopp tucking in and helping overload the midfield, because that's one thing that I've noticed with TFC. They can be a bit light in midfield at times. Alonso Coelho is excellent. Really like his midfield profile. He's so fun on the ball. They've been running Matty Longstaff in there, but at times they can get overloaded in midfield. So having Schopp tuck in, and also that's something where with Raposo, sometimes I guess the concern can be is that if he drifts forward, who's on that side with him? It's Bernadeschi. You want to just, you know, make sure you limit that kind of space on that side. So I'd say Ahmed and Schopp, and then I'd say, yeah, Pico, Krylak, and Galt. So I'd say you run it back, and there's a lot of options on the bench to bring off. So definitely going to be interesting to see. I mean, what do you say for the lineup? I guess at that point, that pretty much is my projected lineup.
I mean, yeah, for me, the only things I would even think about are White if he's 100% fit and you're confident in it. And then, as I mentioned, you know, just Raposo if you wanted to go a little more guns blazing on the attack. But other than that, I think broadly speaking, I agree. And I like maybe going with that same lineup for the opening 45. And then if it's nil-nil at that point and you want to throw something else in the mix, you feel like you have options. You know, you have White off the bench, you have a Raposo, you can throw Johnson in. There's still some options there to be had to really mix things up.
Well, that's it. You feel Schopf is struggling, you can throw Berhalter. You want a bit more wide presence, you can throw on Raposo. You've got Adekugbe waiting in the wings. You got White, Johnson, Utvik at the back if you feel like the back line needs a shake up again for whatever reason. Definitely, I think there'll be options there. So look, to finish things off as usual, let's do predictions. I'm trying to, how did we do for predictions last time? I think we both went win, dare I say?
No, we both went, I think, 1-1, or we went draw, because we kind of rated Portland, and it was looking that way for a while there. So I don't feel too terrible about those predictions.
Okay, yeah, no, I think I'm pretty sure. I think I want to say I was either a narrow win or draw. Maybe I'll have to listen back and confirm, because I clearly need to start writing down these predictions some weeks. But look, I just want to, before we do a look ahead at my prediction, I just want to throw something fun for you. Do you know this fixture has been one of late goals? Kind of random, but 2019, Vancouver hosted TFC on, I think it was their 45th anniversary night. There was some Whitecaps legends in the building. I remember that. The TFC lineup, by the way, an absolute gem. There was Terrence Boyd started up front with Josie Altidor. Pozuelo was behind them. Liam Fraser and Mark Delgado were in the middle. Fraser had a phenomenal game, if you remember correctly. Justin Morrow was in there in one of his last seasons. Drew Moore was at the back with Laurent Simon. Nick DeLeon came off the bench. Jordan Hamilton came off the bench. Just throwing out some names. For the Caps, you had Crepo, Andy Rose, Cornelius, Godoy, Arise, Huang, Tybert, Adnan, Venuto, Montero, Scott Sutter. Just like, what an era. Like PC and Jordi Reyna and Felipe Martins came off the bench when Zach McMath, Brendan McDonagh, Brett Levi, and Theo Bear were unused substitutes. Anyways, all that to say, 1-1 game, Freddie Montero, 84th minute, Nick DeLeon, 90th minute. All right, entertaining. 2020, that was the time they played each other 5 million times, as I said, or 3 because of the COVID. The two games TFC won handily in Toronto, I think it was. But then the one game in Vancouver, Jake Nowinski scored a 76-minute winner. Entertaining game, relatively late goal. Fast forward to 2021. I don't know if you remember this one. This was when the Whitecaps were in their RSL purgatory where they're in Salt Lake. They played TFC in like Miami of all places, because my TFC, of course, was in their purgatory. Actually, it was Orlando. TFC scored in our Whitecaps. It was 1-1. Whitecaps scored Andy Rose 70th minute. Jonathan Osorio scored in the 82nd minute to steal the point. So another late goal. Then in 2022, the famed Thomas Asol game. This is where he broke his finger, unfortunately. And after a great set game, he made the penalty save, I think it was, against Alejandro Pozuelo. The Whitecaps win it with Toussaint Ricketts' 1-0 goal against his former team. And then that year, the Canadian Championship, Lucas McNaughton tied up the game, 75th-minute header to send it to penalties. Last but not least, in 2023, they had one meeting. The Whitecaps end up winning it with a pair of second-half goals. So all I'm saying is, in your predictions, keep in mind that for whatever reason, second-half goals, late goals, end up being the flavor. So look, derby matches, not never a bad thing to have that sort of flair, especially after the Whitecaps game this weekend.
All right, well, watch out for that. But I don't think my prediction includes one, or at least not one that has the match in the balance. I'm going 3-1 Vancouver Whitecaps. I think the offense rolls, and maybe Gold gets another one. Maybe White gets involved off the bench, and you know, maybe there is a late goal, but I don't think it will decide proceedings.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm going to go 1-0 Caps. I think something where they do enough to shut down TFC. I think they return to business defensively after a couple breakdowns. Maybe this is a good game for them to find that confidence back heading into the big game against the Galaxy. And then I think at the other end, look, TFC is frustrating. It's not going to be easy, but eventually the Whitecaps break the dam. Maybe it's Ryan Gold gets another, or Fafapiko continues to be the man. But hey, look, if he's starting, it feels like he's good for a goal and assist. So maybe I should be predicting 2-0, but no, I'll stick with 1-0 with, you know, a goal from like a Gold or something. And low KG, low event, you end up with the 3 points, all that matters in the end. But yeah, looking forward to it. Big game. Always love these inter Canadian matchups, as we know very well. And who knows, maybe this is an early Canadian championship final preview, for example, with how TFC is playing. Certainly can't count out Montreal. Feels like between them, heck, Atletico Ottawa, with some of the signings they make, maybe they sneak in and upset someone, Forge, etc. Always exciting, these inter Canadian matchups, for many reasons. But to close off the show, as we always do, some big games in MLS this weekend. I have them highlighted. I'll let you run through them quickly. Because, I mean, look, we have El Tráfico for reasons. LAFC kind of struggling to start the year. LA Galaxy in great form. Can they continue a hot start, get a win over their rivals? What a statement that would be after. It kind of feel like it's been LAFC's rivalry the last few years. Something to watch?
Well, this is something where the Galaxy are sort of running the gauntlet of the two West preseason favorites, right? And I mean, certainly with Seattle, it was like a big opportunity for Seattle to get themselves off the bottom. LAFC obviously not struggling as much, but, you know, still a big chance for LAFC to sort of right the ship and, you know, cement their place as still a top team in the West. And for the Galaxy, if they can beat LAFC, then, you know, they're going to be absolutely rolling coming into Vancouver the following weekend. So something to watch out for, if not for just the theater of the all LA matchup, but also for the implications it has for the West and for the Whitecaps. Another one that has implication for the West and the Whitecaps is Minnesota RSL. RSL coming off a big win, Minnesota dropping points for the first time against Philadelphia, who kind of looked back on form. Chicho Arango obviously had that hat trick for Real Salt Lake and was MLS Player of the Week, so he's in top form. And it feels like up front for Salt Lake, they finally found something a little bit. They were sputtering to start the year, but it's picked up in a major way. And then Alex, we've for the true MLS sickos out there, those that want to tuck into some Eastern Conference action as well, we picked out one good one we're kind of looking forward to.
Yeah, Cincy Red Bulls, Cincinnati continuing to want to find their feet to start the year. They still lead the East. They still lead the Supporter Shield race, right? Look, the defending Supporter Shield champs wanting to run it back. They ended up drawing Charlotte this weekend, so they'll want to bounce back. Red Bulls will look to bounce back after a 1-1 draw of their own. Could be a bit of an early, you know, battle for position. It's 1v4 in the East. Those sorts of games certainly matter. And yeah, look, that's a good one. And yeah, in the West, the fact that RSL's second, or is RSL's third, Minnesota's fourth, two good games that maybe kind of shaped the early race. Of course, it's way too early to look at playoff standings, but look, as we've said time and time again, every point you get at this stage of the standings just means a little less work to do at the end of the year, right? It allows you time to, if there are valleys, if there are injuries, every point you can bank when you're in top form goes a long way. But that's it for MLS stuff. That's it for the show, really. Just a quick note here at 199. Of course, I have episode 200 next week. It'll be a lot of Whitecaps chatter about the Derby, but it will be a pretty jam-packed episode because the Canadian Premier League kicks off next weekend. Not this weekend, next weekend. For those in BC, it's a great weekend. You got Pacific, they host, I think it's Halifax, I want to say, in a coastal clash on the 13th, they do. And then, meanwhile, the next day, Vancouver FC hosts Valor. So lots of options in BC. You've also got Galaxy Caps at BC Place if you're staying a little more local. No shortage of that. All that to say, we'll dive into what 2024 might look like for Pacific, for Vancouver, and also talk about their kits. Like, my goodness, what is going on over there? We hyped up Pacific's a few weeks ago. We hyped up Vancouver's main one. And then Vancouver just seemed to blow it out. Everyone out of the water with the cherry blossom kit. I am all for pink kits, especially when it looks like that. And man, at least one thing's for sure. No matter how they actually look on the field, they're going to look good. that's for sure.
Well, I was going to say, I've thrown it back to VFC Pacific matchups last year. And I feel like aesthetically, in terms of some of the photos we saw out of that, the on-pitch aesthetics, it was tremendous. And I feel like it's just going to be another step up this season. Alex, I mean, this isn't a video podcast, but where's the cherry blossom kit behind you? It was up earlier in some of your One Soccer content. It's a good backdrop. We need to get that thing hung up there. And I don't know, I might have to. I'm not a huge kit guy, only because like I like talking about the kits, I like commenting on them, I like seeing them in person. I just don't necessarily reach for one to like wear on a daily basis. So I'm not into buying a bunch of them, but man, that cherry blossom one, that might make the list. That's That's one of the best things I've seen in a while. In terms of especially like not just as a football kit, but as like a piece of fashion wear, you know, it's just I feel like it's pretty easy to style and a pretty cool piece of kit to have. And obviously the photo shoots that went along with it too. You know, shout out to our friend Bo, who does a tremendous job of all that stuff.
Oh, he knocked it out of the park. The shots of them and the blossoms. It was stunning. And, you know, as well, Danny on the video as well. They killed it generally. So great seeing. Yeah, that kit definitely will be a lot in the background of the videos. I didn't have it on today. Just, of course, we're doing audio podcast that I'm keeping in a nice, safe, dry space. You know, don't want to, you know, get too much sunlight, as this room sometimes does, protecting it because it's a beauty. So no, exciting. I mean, look, the CPL has nailed all the kits. Heck, Valor released theirs today, the last one to do. So you're kind of like, you know, with everything going on, what is, you know, Valor, what do they do? Hey, they went for an indigenous theme home kit. Looks pretty cool, something different. I think it's something where a lot of potential in that one. They also did a throwback kit to one of the original Winnipeg pros or soccer teams. I don't know if it's pro or not. Like, teams are trying stuff across the league. So yeah, exciting. We're definitely diving into CPL next week, because while they're all going to look good with their kits, because man, like out of the 16 or so kits released, you'd be hard pressed to find one bad one. There's also been some big signings off the field. You know, VFC's made some pushes. Pacific's lost some guys, so they're in a bit more of a retool. But they've got a guy in James Merriman who's been there heading into year 6. Not as head coach, but on the staff. You know, he will have a vision of how to make things work, even though they've lost some key guys. So going to be excited to see how the BC teams fare as they look to both make the playoffs in the same year, which would be quite something. But look, we'll save that all, the in-depth stuff, for episode 200. So stay tuned if you like Whitecaps chatter and CPL chatter. It's going to be a double dipping of that. But on the note, you want all that? You want Canada? You know, you got the women's team playing She Believes Cup this weekend. Got some NWSL, MLS, Canadians abroad. I'll be doing my best to follow it all on Twitter, Alex Gunkeruzic and Blue Sky. And then, of course, you got Instagram threads at AGR on the case. And make sure, if you've enjoyed the pod, to leave a rate, a review, leave a like, leave a 5-star, all that stuff means a lot. Of course, you can find us on all the major platforms, but you can also find us at Third Sub Pod on Twitter. You know, and make sure to show some love if you enjoyed it, because it's been great to, again, some great support as the start of the year. It's been a bright one for the Whitecaps, and I imagine the CPL, League One, everything gets in action. Gonna have some fun shows ahead.
Yeah, Alex, no better way to celebrate episode 200 than wide-ranging BC and Canadian soccer chat as the CPL season gets underway. Hopefully another Vancouver Whitecaps win, but hey, a Canadian team will win in BC plays this upcoming Saturday. So we'll be breaking that down as well. You can find me, as always, at Samuel_Roboat on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. As always, you know, pre, post game, during the game, whether it's on social or on the website, you can find us there. And yeah, make sure to, you know, leave a comment, like, subscribe, engage, all of that good stuff. We really appreciate the support. So enjoy the football this upcoming weekend, and we'll chat again soon.